It looked as though she was made up from translucent white membranes, folded with loving care around her svelte body, then flowing free somehow to become her fragile robes as well. She was a sublime child in her early teens, poised between girlhood and womanhood, what he imagined an angel or fairy would be like. And she danced all the while, twirling effortlessly from foot to foot, more supple and graceful than any ballerina, her face blessed by a bountiful smile. She held out her arms to him, ragged sleeves floating softly in the unfelt breeze. "See," she said, "we can stop it hurting." Her arms rose, palms pressing together above her head, and she spun round again, lightsome laughter echoing. "Please," he begged her, "oh, please." The pain returned to his legs, making him cry out. His siren vision began to retreat, skipping lightly over the emptiness. She paused and cocked her head. "Is this what you want?" she asked, her dainty face frowning in concern. "No, back, come back, please." Her smile became rapturous, and her arms closed around him in a celebratory embrace. Stuart gave himself up to her balmy caresses, drowning in a glorious tide of white light. Ilex coasted out of its wormhole terminus 100,000 kilometers above Lalonde. The warped gateway leading out of space-time contracted behind the void hook as it refocused its distortion field. Sensors probed round cautiously. The Bitech starship was at full combat stations alert. Waiting tensely on his acceleration couch in the crew toroid, Captain Auster skimmed through the wealth of data which both the Bitech and electronic systems gathered. His primary concern was that there were no hostile ships within a quarter of a million kilometers, and no weapon sensors were locking onto the Void Hawk's hull. A resonance effect in Ilex's distortion field revealed various ship-sized masses orbiting above Lalonde. Then there were asteroids, satellites, moons, boulder-sized debris. Nothing large was in the starship's immediate vicinity. It took a further 8 seconds for Ilex and Oxyro, the weapons system officer working in tandem, to confirm the absence of any valid threat. "Okay, let's go for a parking orbit. 700 kilometers out," Auster said.
700? Ilex queried.
"Yes, your distortion field won't be so badly affected at that altitude. We can still run if we have to." "Very well." Together their unified minds arrived at a suitable flight vector. Ilex swooped down the imaginary line towards the bright blue and white planet. "We're going into a parking orbit," Auster said aloud, for the benefit of the 3 Adamus naval officers on the bridge. "I want combat stations maintained at all times, and please bear in mind who could be here waiting for us." He allowed an overtone of stern anxiety to filter out to the Edenus crew to emphasize the point. "Oxyro, what's our local space station?"
9 starships in a parking orbit, 7 colonist carriers and 2 cargo ships. There are 3 interplanetary fusion drive ships en route from the asteroid Kenyon heading for Lalonde orbit. Nothing else in the system."
"I can't get any response from Lalonde Civil Flight Control," said Arato, the spaceplane pilot. He looked up from the communication console he was operating.
"The geosynchronous communication platform is working as far as I can tell. They just don't answer."
Auster glanced over at Lieutenant Jeroen van Ewyk, the Confederation Navy intelligence officer they had brought with them from Avon. "What do you think?"
"This is a backward planet anyway, so their response isn't going to be instantaneous. But given the contents of those flecks, I'd rather not take any chances. I'll try and contact Kelvin Solanke directly through the Navy Elint satellites. Can you see if you can get anything from your planet-side agents?"
"We'll broadcast," Auster said.
"Great. Erato, see what the other starship captains can tell us. It looks like they must have been here some time, if there are this many left in orbit."
Auster added his own voice to Ilex's affinity call, spanning the colossal distance to the gas giant. Ithra answered straight away, but the immature habitat could only confirm the data which Laurie and Darcy had included in their fleck to the Edenist embassy on Avon.
Since Kelvin Solanke had transmitted the files to Marora, there had only been the usual weekly status updates from Lalonde. The last one, 4 days ago, had contained a host of information on the colony's deteriorating civil situation.